You're listening to Food Integrity Now with your host, Carol Grave. Hello and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Grave. I'm your host today. At Food Integrity Now, we envision a world without GMOs, a thriving world where our food is safe for our children and our grandchildren. If you share this vision, go to our website and join us. Food Integrity Now has really been a labor of love for us over the past 3 years. We'd like to ask your assistance. If you'd like to advertise with us, please contact us at info@foodintegritynow.org or just click on the donate button if you'd like to assist in that way. We really want to continue to bring you these wonderful podcasts on a weekly basis, but we need your help to do so. So thanks for anything that you can do. Our show today is brought to you in part by Biolumina Spirulina. Hi, it's Carol again. I don't endorse many products, but Biolumina Spirulina is one product that I highly endorse. Spirulina is called a superfood because its nutrient content is more potent than any other food. It has been proven that you could actually live on this product. Biolumina Spirulina is the premium spirulina. It contains more phycocyanin than any other spirulina. Phycocyanin is a powerful antioxidant. It is grown cleanly without any synthetics, GMOs, and pesticide, and it's also a proven immune booster and is a radiation protectant and cleanser. I've been taking this product for over a year, and I feel like it's one of the finest whole food supplements on the market. To find out more about Biolumina, go to www.newphoenixrising.com/beingwell. Once again, that's www.newphoenixrising.com/beingwell. Or just go to the show page and click on the link. You're going to really love this product. My guest today is Mark McAfee. Mark is the owner of Organic Pastures Dairy Company. Organic Pastures became California's first raw milk dairy and produces 100% USDA certified organic grade A raw milk. Mark, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be with you.
Oh, we're excited to have you on our show today. Can you let our listeners know a little bit more about you and how you became a dairy farmer?
Well, first of all, let me ask you this question. Where is your show being broadcast?
Our show is being broadcast in Colorado, but it's actually a podcast, so it's heard all over the world.
Well, that's an interesting point you make because how I started out raw milk and what I'm doing. I'm here in California, and I'm the CEO and founder of Organic Pastures Dairy. We're, some people say the largest organic raw milk dairy in the world, but I know in the United States we're the largest. We're milking 450 cows on 500 acres of pasture, and we serve 400 retail stores here in California. We are a very hard-working bunch. It's a family operation with 65 employees. We have 22 trucks running to these 400 stores every day of the week to assure that all the consumers get their raw milk. And the milk sells at $18 to $19 a gallon, which is $8 to $9 a half gallon. So it's extraordinarily high-priced relative to other products in the dairy case. But people can't get enough of it, and that's because it's raw. It's unprocessed and whole. It has all of its enzymes, all of its beneficial bacteria, all of its fats. Everything's there, has not been processed in any way, and it's an extremely popular product because it's an immune system food. It heals the gut, provides the beneficial bacteria in the gut that rebuilds the immune system. Because remember, 80% of your immune system is the beneficial bacteria that reside in your gut. Now, you in Colorado, you can't get legal raw milk, but you have, I think, 125 or 130 cow share operations that legally operate that allow raw milk to be accessed on a local basis. And those operations, from what I understand, are doing really, really well, too. So every state in the Union of the United States has kind of a different take on raw milk, and everybody has to kind of, you know, find their raw milk in their own way. There's only 8 states that allow the retail sale of raw milk, where there's many states, there's 28 states that you have to go to the farm to get it, or it's absolutely illegal. So you can see the raw milk can kind of become a problem because with people living across state lines from one another where raw milk may be illegal or legal, and the internet, people become jealous and they want to change the laws where they live. So that's kind of a little bit of a start off from the whole raw milk thing.
Okay, well, let's back up a little bit. Let's talk about the history of raw milk and how we went from drinking raw milk to pasteurized milk.
Great question. Well, prior to the 1850s or so, raw milk was everything anybody drank, 1850s. Grass, you had grass, you had sunshine, you had a goat, a cow, or a sheep, and you would drink the milk, and you didn't have to hunt because the milk was right there. You could make it into cheese. So it was something commonly available to everybody in the 1700s and 1800s across America. In fact, it was imperative they had a cow within a mile or two of your home so you could get fresh raw milk to make kefir or cheeses, butter and yogurts and things like that. But in the late 1800s, there was a real problem that occurred. Cows are being moved into downtown areas, and there's no more green grass to feed them. Boston Commons comes to mind. Where the Boston Commons was no longer green pasture, it became a mud hole. And the cows are being fed in these downtown areas were being fed brewers' distillers' grains. And these brewers' distillers' grains were coming out of rum distilleries and alcohol manufacturing plants, and the cows had never eaten that before. They've always eaten, you know, with their four stomachs, they eat grass. And so cows could make milk, very poor quality milk, from these distiller's grains. Well, during the late 1800s or so, the water quality was horrible in these downtown areas. No flushing toilets, no hand washing, sanitary conditions were deplorable. Typhoid fever was very rampant, and there was all kinds of other problems with brucellosis and tuberculosis. And the milk that was produced on these downtown brewery dairies was literally killing 40 to 50% of the people that drank it every year. And it was called the milk problem. And in 1893, a doctor by the name of Dr. Coit lost a son to horribly terrible distillers grain fed raw milk. And he decided to champion certified raw milk and clean up the act. So we started the American Association of Medical Milk Commissions in 1893. And that milk was very popular because it had no digestive problems and it had no allergies associated with the pasteurized milk or the parboiled milk, as they called it. And from 1893, there was parboiled milk or pasteurized milk, and there was raw milk, certified raw milk. And they kind of lived in semi-harmony until the 1940s. But the raw milk was considered physician's milk. Physicians would prescribe milk because it was such a healing, curing, compatible food for children that it was always the children that drank certified raw milk that thrived and did so well because their immune systems were good and their cheeks were pink and they didn't get sick. So anyway, that said, in 1940, 1945, we were fighting World War II. We ran out of money in this country, and we weren't thinking of nutrition at all. We were thinking that, you know, atomic bombs were the solution to ending problems, and that you know, DDT was good for your skin, and smoking was good for your lungs. That's kind of where our head was in 1945. And so industry had a solution for everything in 1945. So we decided, well, would we just get rid of all this quality assurance hassle of certified raw milk and just have pasteurized milk, and we'd have a long shelf life in the bargain, and we could consolidate dairies and not have so many small dairies. And that's kind of what the evolution was, where raw milk was kind of, there was bid farewell, you know, bid see you later, as pasteurized milk took over. And we've, you know, since 1990, there was 600,000 dairies in America in 1990, but now there's only 49,000 dairies. So you see, only 1 in 12 dairies, just in the last 25 years or so, has survived this consolidation industrialization of milk products in America. So that's just the last 25 years. But that's been going on for 70 or 80 years now. But there's a big emergence now of people saying, wait a minute, my gut is not a shelf life. My gut needs bacteria and enzymes and all the wonderful fats and things that are found in raw milk. And this product is produced by industrial factory farms that is good for shelf life. It's hard to digest because it sticks around and it's not temperature sensitive. It sustains itself because it's so dead. Well, your gut does not do well with dead food. It needs to have a living, vibrant, digestible, ready-to-break-down food. Well, ready-to-break-down food and shelf-life food are completely opposite ends of the spectrum. So this whole raw milk movement that we're seeing in America today is kind of ushering in the local food movement in its most wonderful fashion, because it's so good for farmers because it paid well, and it's so good for consumers because they're nourished so well. And the one people that are cheated are the processors. And I could care less about them because they've been cheating farmers forever. But the processors hate raw milk, and their bed partners are obviously the FDA. And so the FDA and the bed partners of the processing industries, they always come out against raw milk, and they talk about the 1870s and how many people died from raw milk, which is true, but they don't talk about the fact that now we understand organic practices, now we understand pathogenicity and bacteria and testing technologies, and we have good standards for raw milk. There's no reason why we can't have raw milk now to be a very safe food. In fact, those people that produce raw milk in a responsible fashion, it's one of the most safe foods in America. So it's extremely exciting to see a new emergence of the dairy industry as a local farmer, family farm type operation with cows on pastures and the super, super happy, well-nourished consumers.
Okay, so I have two questions around that. How is the nutrition of milk destroyed in the pasteurization process? And what exactly is homogenization?
Well, when you say the word nutrition, it's kind of an undefined term, because according to the FDA, they would say the nutrition is presence of protein, presence of fats, and presence of sugar. End of story. That's it. Okay. Well, in Mother Nature's definition of nutrition and nourishment, it's a completely different list. You would have enzymes, beneficial bacteria, good fats, all the oligosaccharides, sugars that are there, all the other enzymes like phosphatase enzymes and the bacteria that create the lipase enzyme, the bacteria that create the lactase enzyme so people don't have lactose intolerance, bacteriocins, colicins, all kinds of interesting nuances, amino acids, fatty acids, all of these things are not described as nutrients or nutrition by the FDA on the label you see on the outside of a pasteurized milk carton.
Right. So that makes a lot of sense. But what is homogenized milk?
Well, I'll get that. What happens is all those things I listed, that huge laundry list, are destroyed or changed. So you're no longer getting the full benefit of what Mother Nature intended you to eat. Now, here's the deal. Homogenization is completely non-food safety related. At least pasteurization has the excuse they're trying to get rid of bad bugs. But homogenization has nothing to do with food safety. It's convenience of processing. It's a way of getting rid of or allowing the removal of, I should say, a cream off the top of milk and use that cream to make butter or make that cream into some other kind of product. And be able to take the milk that's left and add in other things. Because when you homogenize, you actually destroy the butterfat cells. So when you have a whole milk homogenized product, you've taken the cream, destroyed it by destroying the factors that make it float and become buoyant, and it homogenizes it, completely integrates it back into the product, and the cream never floats to the top. And in the case of skim milk, when it's homogenized, it doesn't have butterfat, but it adds back in things like nutrients that are missing, like vitamins, vitamin A, E or D or A, also dried powdered milk. So homogenization is a way to mix things together that would not have normally mixed together in natural conditions. So it's a way of industrial processing to integrate it in dried powdered milk for mouthfeel and protein. It's a way to integrate in other things like vitamins. It's also a way to make the homogenized milk not show its cream level because they want to do something else with that cream, like make butter.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, you talk about raw milk and it being alive and how it affects the gut bacteria. Can you let us know some of the science behind the health benefits of raw milk?
Sure. There are something called QMRAs. A QMRA is a scientific study of the risk analysis of a food product. It's a quantitative microbiological risk assessment, QMRA. In Europe, they've done many of these assessments on raw milk and found them to be the lowest risk foods of all foods. And the reason is that in Europe they look at food a little differently than here in the United States. In Europe they look at food as a preventative, nutritional way to not get sick. It's part of the medical paradigm in Europe. In the United States, we don't associate food and illness at all. We associate, you get sick, you go to the doctor, take a pill.
Right.
You get too fat, you get lap band surgery. The medical establishment is the sole solution that the FDA has allowed the public access to take care of ourselves when we're sick. We don't say, oh, by the way, if you get sick, you need to eat these kinds of foods. We don't do that. In Europe, they do. So the QRMRA process, there's actually been four of them done that I'm aware of that actually talk about the benefits of raw milk and the low-risk assessment of raw milk, and they were done in Europe. The QMRA process is actually the gold standard for doing these risk assessments, are actually embraced by the FDA, but the FDA politically will not accept that data because it conflicts with their policy that raw milk is the most dangerous food on the planet, which is not true at all. It's completely untrue. In fact, the QMRA scientific review by Codex, scientists using their standards in Europe, and the standards done in Europe show emphatically that, in fact, raw milk, especially when produced for human consumption, is among the lowest risk foods. So it's interesting to see the science there.
Yeah, and it's interesting that the FDA considers it such a dangerous food. Why do you think that is?
Well, there's specifically the Parsifal study, the Gabriella study, the Amish study, and the Pasteur a cohort study. In all those studies, they showed tremendous benefit to children that drank raw milk, that gets rid of asthma, prevents asthma, ear infections, allergic rhinitis, and allergies. And in fact, the Pasteur study, the cohort study, showed that the moms that drank raw milk during their pregnancy had a completely different kind of cord blood antibody for their babies when the babies were born, which gave a lot of IgE resistance to allergies and aspirin to those children for their lives. So the FDA completely says, no, we will not accept this peer-reviewed published information by the best scientists in the world studying 40,000 kids. We won't accept this because it conflicts completely with their policies that they have with the pasteurized milk ordinance, that all milk is absolutely filthy. It doesn't matter how it's prepared. It all must be pasteurized. And their communion with the processing industry. It's the Food Inc. revolving door in its most grotesque manifestation. So the FDA is no longer functioning as an advocacy organization of the U.S. government to protect public health. It is an advocacy organization to protect the greed and need of processing agents. And that's exactly what's going on in America in its most grotesque fashion.
No, I have to agree with you on that one. Well, many people have concerns about the safety of raw milk, and why do you think that is?
Well, if you look back at the 1800s, it's very clear that raw milk in filthy conditions killed 50% of people that consumed it. Absolutely a true statement. However, modern raw milk produced with care, with standards, with testing. In fact, if you go to the rawmilkinstitute.org, you'll show farmers that have written food safety plans and have demonstrated practices and show their bacteria counts, their actual bacteria counts that are performed, actually published. They're on a website showing their story, their food safety plan, and how incredibly clean that milk is. Now, according to the FDA, the pasteurized milk ordinance allows up to 750 coliforms, which are sanitation indicator bacteria, in a milliliter of milk that goes on to be pasteurized. Well, interesting to note that in states that permit raw milk for retail sale, that the coliform standards are generally in coliforms. So you can see the quantum difference between the expectations of safety between a really dirty milk at 750 coliforms, which is so many you can't count them on a Petri dish, and 10 coliforms per milliliter, and oftentimes these counts are 1 or 2, which are not disease-causing organisms, by the way, but they are sanitation indicator organisms, which often accompany pathogens. So you can see really super clean milk versus really dirty dead milk. Now, pasteurization does not clean up milk. It simply kills off really dirty milk. So the FDA, they're on a crossroads right now. They don't know what to do because they've got their alliances with big processing organizations, and they've got the consumers beating down their walls saying, we want legalized raw milk to be transported across state lines. We want good standards, and we want the FDA to start acting on behalf of the consumers. And especially when you see the Parsifal study in Europe where the children that drank raw milk, their asthma went away or prevented asthma 87% of the time, which is a tremendous value for asthma. When you have 4,000 kids a year that die from asthma in the United States using FDA treatment medications, when kids that drink raw milk get rid of their asthma completely without side effect. So there's a real collision right now in this crossroads in America where the FDA needs to choose up and find out who their true customer is, and that's the consumers of America and the farmers of America, not the pharmaceutical organizations.
Right. I will agree with you on that, too. Well, what does the CDC say about milk?
What they say on their website is that raw milk is a dangerous food and never consume it. But what they say in their data is completely different. If you look at the actual data that they have for pasteurized milk and raw milk, it's abhorrent what they've represented on their website, saying how raw milk is so dangerous. There have been zero deaths, zero, nada, none, zero deaths from raw milk since 1972 when the FDA and CDC started collecting the data. There's been 1,100 illnesses from raw milk during that time, which is about 30 illnesses per year, but all people have recovered and no one's died. There's been 422,000 illnesses from pasteurized milk, with over 70 deaths if you include the cheese deaths that occurred at Jalisco cheese incident in 1985. So it's certainly not a guarantee of safety that if something's pasteurized, then in fact it's safe. But I go one step farther, and that is there's two kinds of raw milk in America. Raw milk for people, which is done according to good standards and testing and policy, which is very clean milk, and raw milk for pasteurization, which is done under the pasteurized milk ordinance. And the sooner we recognize that there's two kinds of raw milk in America, the sooner we'll start getting good data at the CDC to divide out pasteurizer failures versus pasteurizer illnesses versus raw milk and actually see some better data. But currently you'll see what I've just said, which is basically no deaths from raw milk at all since 1972.
Yeah, and what measures is Organic Pastures taking to ensure the safety of milk?
Well, the first thing I say is we never, ever guarantee 100% safety. What we do is we guarantee one thing. If you drink raw milk, you have an improved immune system, so if a bad bug does come your way from wherever it might come, including cantaloupe that killed 34 people in the last 24 months, your fighting chance is going to be much, much better. But what we do is we do about 6 tests per day on our milk. The state of California does 1 test per month on our milk. We test 5 or 6 times a day. And so we have real numbers all the time. And we provide these numbers back to the guys that actually do the milking for us in our milk barn. So they know how good of a job they're actually doing. The cleanliness of the udder, the milking machines and everything. And we incentivize them economically in their paycheck. We've actually put the rubber right where it meets the road in terms of food safety, where the cleanliness of the udder, and you go into our milk barn, you know, the teats and the machines are incredibly clean. And as a result, you see extremely clean milk, and the tests reveal that. So we've taken that right to the bottom line. Now, we are RAMI listed. We're a Raw Milk Institute listed at Organic Pastures Dairy. We're audited by RAMI auditors. Dr. Katharina Berg does her audits of our dairy. And we actually post our bacteria counts at the rawmilkinstitute.org website so everybody can see it around the world. There's no secrecy whatsoever. Total transparency of information, so there's no surprises. Everybody knows exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, and can you explain a little bit, is it important how a cow is milked, the way that you milk a cow versus the way that the industrial dairy farmer milks a cow?
Yeah, I think there's two things. Number one, the milking conditions. In other words, what kind of conditions are the cows kept in? Are they always in shade with lots of wet manure around them, given a lot of antibiotics and hormones and grain conditions, and it causes all kinds of problems with pathogens in the cow's manure and ends up in her milk? Or is she on green grass pastures? Is she away from, you know, never gets any antibiotics, very little grain, mostly alfalfa or grass? And you know, what kind of conditions are the cows in? That's number one. Number two is, what kind of milking conditions do you have in the milk parlor? Is there sunlight? Is the water clean? Is the udder completely cleaned? And is it dried? Are the milking machines incredibly clean? What are the temperatures you're using to wash the milking machines? Are you really doing a good job of CIP or cleaning? Are you rapidly chilling the milk? All these things are very, very important. Now, when you do pasteurized milk, they're hardly important at all. Because anything goes. You put it in the milk tank, send it down to the creamery, and they're going to pasteurize the heck out of it. Good, bad, and ugly in there, it doesn't matter. So when you have raw milk, you have one farmer taking full responsibility for the milk. You've got to do a really good job of setting the conditions for the way the cows are eating and laying. And then number two is how you milk that cow and make sure the udder is very clean and dry and the milk machines are clean and dry and that milk goes in, it's chilled rapidly and tested. So it's a different set of practices for, again, two kinds of raw milk in America, raw milk for people versus raw milk for the pasteurizer. Completely distinctive, different standards and processes.
Well, that all makes sense in the way that you do things. Yep. Have you heard the talk about the aspartame that may be added to milk in the near future? Have you seen that?
Oh, you want to start a fist fight, huh?
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Is that crazy or what? What's your take on that? I mean, I think I know, but.
Well, here's the deal. I'm not so against the dairy industry putting things in milk, but I am really, 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 really against them putting things in milk and not telling people about it. You know, when the industry goes in and says we have a standard of identity, in other words, whatever that standard of identity is for, let's say, 2% milk. If it meets that standard of identity, we don't have to put it on the label as an ingredient because it's the law. If it's 2% milk, then that's the standard of identity legally. Whatever that standard says, you can put it in there. You don't have to tell a consumer about it. That's really, really wrong. And that's what's going on. There are these standards of identity that are allowed under the FDA code that if they're passed through the administrative process, that a certain product means something under a standard of identity, you don't have to tell the consumer what that is because it is approved as a standard of identity. And there are so many standards of identity that have these funky things like milk protein concentrate in there that are not actually depicted as an ingredient on the label because it's approved as a part of the standard of identity. Legally, it's part of the standard of identity. So bottom line is, they were trying to do a sneak one on this, where they would put in this non-nutritive sweetener, aspartame, into milk products, especially the chocolate milk products, as a sweetener, but not put it on the label. And the FDA got caught with the pants down because the consumers came unglued by saying, no, we aren't going to have this, we have to put things on the label that are in the product. When in the dairy industry, they've been doing this sneaky thing for so long that they thought they'd get away with it now. And with the internet and people becoming more and more conscious, they won't put up with that kind of crap. Ingredients in their food that they don't see on the label. So at this point, I don't know what's going to happen. There's a big food fight going on over that whole thing.
Right, and I personally think it's just a marketing ploy to get more kids to drink milk because milk, you know, so many people are allergic to milk, number one.
Yes.
And I have an interesting thing to tell you. I was interviewing Sally Fallon.
Yep.
A while back, and I was one of the people who really thought I had a dairy allergy, and then I started, you know, using the raw products, and Sally said to me, "Well, you don't have a dairy issue. You have a pasteurization issue."
Exactly.
And I realized firsthand how true that was. So I think just educating the public about all of this is just so important, which is why we're doing this show, because there are so many people that truly believe that raw milk is dangerous.
We have been told as a consuming population of citizens across the United States that raw milk is dangerous, one drop will kill you, and that if you have a problem with pasteurized milk, you have a problem. The pasteurization is not the problem. You have some kind of a deficiency in you. And there's been whole races of people, black people, Asians, Hispanics, Indians, have been told you have a problem. It's almost like discrimination in terms of the industry saying there's some kind of a problem with you as a race. And it's absolutely untrue because raw milk is a complete food with its beneficial bacteria that recolonize the gut, the enzymes, and everything else. Nearly everybody on earth can drink raw milk, including the blacks, including, African-American. The Maasai drink raw milk like crazy in Africa. The Chinese, no problem. The Mongolians have been drinking raw milk for thousands of years. So the bottom line is it's whole food with all the good stuff for anybody on earth to drink, especially if you give it enough time to acclimate for your gut, versus processed milk, which is defective and deficient and partial and does not have all the factors to digest. In fact, Dr. Bruce German, who is the foremost researcher on raw milk in the world at UC Davis here in California, has said a couple of things to me in a meeting we had a couple months ago, a lunch up at UC Davis. He said, raw milk is deficient, it's partial, and non-digestible by children because children do not have a fully developed digestive tract. It needs a fully packaged food which has all the elements to break down rapidly. Those elements are not available in pasteurized milk. That's what he said. He also said that pasteurization is an 18th century solution to an 18th century problem, quote unquote.
Oh, I love that.
So, yeah. The bottom line is we could do much better. And here in California with organic pasteurized dairy, I know we're doing really well. And there's more technologies that are going to be coming on here in the next couple of years to allow rapid testing of pathogens. Instead of having to wait for two days, it'll be 2 hours. You know what your batch of milk has in it or doesn't have in it. So there's new technologies coming in that's going to make pasteurization really, really something 18th century here real quick, especially if you go to the FDA website and Google most allergenic food in America. Number one is pasteurized milk, the most allergenic food. And there's 8 children that have died from pasteurized milk, not because of bad bugs, but because of the allergenicity to it since 1998. So it is not a benign food. It is a serious problem. Now, I will say this. When you culture pasteurized milk, especially low-temperature pasteurized milk that you culture, you put yogurt bacteria back into, it does CPR on it somewhat. It brings back the biological activity of it and makes it much more less allergenic and much more digestible by people that have lactose intolerance, especially with cheeses and yogurt. So we're seeing the European kind of model in the market where people are drinking and eating more of the yogurts and the cheeses that are pasteurized and completely avoiding pasteurized milk because of its non-digestibility and its allergenicity. And people are picking up their raw milk, and it's helping them even digest the pasteurized products better because raw milk has those enzymes and bacteria missing in pasteurized products that have even been cultured. So we're seeing a change in the marketplace based on the physiological needs of the human gut.
Well, and I think that's what it's going to take.
And dollar voting. Yeah. Dollar voting. Consumers saying, I'm not going to buy that anymore.
Right, exactly. Well, I understand you did a petition, 4 years ago or so to the FDA?
Yes.
And can you tell our listeners a little bit about that petition and what was the outcome?
Oh, this is very exciting for me. 4 years ago, almost 4.5 years ago, I petitioned the FDA under their citizens petition process, which is a formal administrative appeals process. And I sent in this major argument that basically said that raw milk produced in California and allowed to be sold in retail stores in California, 400 stores in California, should be allowed to go across state lines into other states that also allow raw milk to be sold in stores, i.e. Arizona. We have a bunch of stores here in California called Sprout stores, and our raw milk is one of their top-selling products. A bunch of stores down in Phoenix and Arizona, well, they wanted to sell it there too, but we could not take it from California into Phoenix, Arizona to sell it in these stores. And I thought, let's ask the FDA to narrowly amend. Let's ask them to take one brick out of the Berlin Wall here, not take the whole thing down, just one brick out of the Berlin Wall to allow raw milk to go across state lines between two states, adjacent states, that allow the retail sale of raw milk, a rational, reasonable kind of thing. And the FDA would not respond, even though they sent me a letter saying that they'd received the citizen petition. They didn't respond. Even though they're supposed to respond within 180 days, they refused to respond. So Gary Cox with the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, who's an attorney, part of the Weston Price whole thing, is a wonderful, wonderful defense fund, sued the FDA on our behalf under a writ of mandamus to force them to comply with their own laws. And what do you know, within a couple of weeks of the hearing we had to hear this writ of mandamus, the FDA responded to my citizen petition saying, yeah, in their response to my petition, they said two things. They said, number one, raw milk was not in the public interest, number one, and number two, it was not in the FDA's interest.
Oh.
And I thought that was an incredible Freudian slip that they may not even know that they'd done it, because why would the FDA have any interest different than the public?
Right.
And so they went on for pages and pages saying how there was no science, there was no this, there was no that, denying all the things that I'd given to them. And they said, there's no new information, da, da, da. So we are actually keeping this before the court. We're not allowing them to take it out of the court. We have a writ of mandamus. We're forcing the FDA to respond to our citizen petition. But we are amending our citizen petition to actually increase the amount of information, because in the last 4 years there's been a tremendous amount of study around the world, published peer-reviewed studies, UC Davis milk genomic studies, Parsifal studies, Gabriella study, all this stuff. We're submitting all that saying it is in the public interest. Pasteurized milk, under your own offices, acknowledges it's the most allergenic food in America, and that when people die from allergies, you cannot force them to eat a allergenic food. It's not fair. So therefore, responsibly produced raw milk is a very good option and alternative, and we invite the FDA to the table with us to help create standards nationally for raw milk, and to please allow us to go across state lines into Arizona to allow non-allergenic milk, milk that stabilizes mast cells, that whey proteins are still raw, that actually are that wonderful non-histamine-producing food, other than, you know, pasteurized milk triggers the mast cell destruction and histamines go crazy in the body. Raw milk does not. All those arguments are made in this amended petition we are filing now. It's actually being done as we speak. And we're keeping this before the court. So we've actually drugged them into the court, and they can no longer just arbitrarily say things like it's not in the public's interest. We're saying it is very much in the public interest, and we want you to answer to a judge who's going to say, defend yourselves, make arguments that stick, show us the science, and they have none, zero, zip. And they also don't have any dead bodies to show anybody. The last people that died from milk were pasteurized milk at Whittier Farms in 2007, where three people died from listeria. There's been no listeria at all associated with raw milk ever in 1972 forward, and yet the FDA claims there is. There is no science behind it. CDC has zero. We have sworn affidavits from the FDA, no listeria in raw milk, only listeria in pasteurized milk and pasteurized milk cheeses. So the FDA is going to have a real come to Jesus here pretty quick when it comes to coming to truth, having to not be able to hide behind a rock and lie anymore. It's going to be a real serious wake-up call for the FDA to come to a point where they have to acknowledge science.
Wow. Well, we'll be watching this closely.
Yes.
keep us posted about the outcome of that, because that's...
Oh, yeah. It'll be big news.
Yeah. So I'm really interested in that. How many states is selling raw milk legal? What did you say, 8 or 9?
Yeah, 8 or 9.
Okay.
In Utah, they have 2 stores in the entire state because you can't sell raw milk and pasteurized milk in the same store, but it's considered a legal, you got Connecticut, Maine, Pennsylvania, Washington, New Mexico, California, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and then South Carolina. Those are the ones that actually allow the retail sale of raw milk in some form. And then you've got, 28 states that allow cow shares or on-farm sales. And then there's 20 states or so that have illegal raw milk in any form.
Wow. Seems like we could get a little bit more uniform with that, too.
Yeah, there's a real chaos right now, and that chaos is intentional because the processing organizations stand before any kind of progress in legislation to change law, because the processors, once the news gets out about raw milk, the processors don't get to process anymore. So the processors are very jealously protecting market share any way they can. And in fact, when you show up at a hearing to try to change law, guess who's there? The FDA holding hands with the local processor.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet that. many of us have seen the videos of the Rossum raid in California where James Stewart, and what he
right.
was, he was actually put in jail for that, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was.
And the SWAT team came in with their guns and confiscated the raw milk products and then the computers and...
And the cherry tomatoes. The cherry tomatoes.
Oh, I didn't know that. They got the cherry tomatoes, too. Okay.
And the melons.
Okay.
Yeah, they took everything.
So have you been shut down? Have you had any of these crazy type raids on organic pastures? Or?
Yes. Remember that Organic Pastures Dairy operates 100% legally under the construct provided by state law.
Right.
Rossum was shut down because they were bringing in raw dairy products from Ohio, from Menomishman,
okay.
Ohio.
Yeah.
So they provided the powers of me to be able to pull their guns out and point it at them because of that illegality of taking raw milk across the state line. Woo. How terrible is that?
Yeah.
So bottom line is Organic Pastures Dairy, yes, we have been shut down 3 times in our record or history, and they were all based on a pathogen either found in our product or suspected to be in our product. Sometimes they don't find a pathogen at all, like a Campylobacter or something in a product that they test, and they'll shut you down anyway because you'll have a group of people that say, oh, they got me sick, and then they'll shut you down for a week to prove that, in fact, it's not your product, and then they let you start back up. So, yes, in 14 years of operations, we've had 3 shutdowns. But they haven't lasted more than a week or so. We had one that lasted 3 weeks, but that was because I intentionally took that time that we were down to actually completely rebuild our entire creamery and install a bunch of new equipment. And we couldn't have done it any other time. So the shutdown came kind of as an opportunity to really rebuild our dairy creamery and have it be the state-of-the-art place that it is now.
Okay. And are you familiar with the increased radiation levels on the West Coast due to Fukushima? And are you concerned
Yes.
about this?
Well, we're always concerned about background radiation, the Fukushima-type radiation. We've tested our products 3 times and not found any increased radiation in our products at all. And there's a couple of reasons why. We're in a desert area here, and radiation tends to be transported in the airstream.
The jet stream?
Jet stream.
Okay.
Complete brain wave here. In the jet stream. And it comes down in rain. So in Northern California, there seems to be a lot more radiation in the grasses and in around the environment there because it has, 40 to 100 inches of rain, where here we have 9 to 10 inches of rain. So I think that the jet stream and the rain, the desert region versus a more of a rainy climate has a lot to do with where you're going to see radiation prevalence.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. So you've actually tested for that.
We do. We test for it. There's a lab in Italy, the Silliker Labs in Italy, that does, 15 or 20 different kinds of radioactive isotope detection tests and they're particular to Fukushima and other. Now there is background radiation that is found on a natural basis that is going to be there regardless. But the Fukushima type and the radioactive isotopes that are found there that would be human interest isotopes are missing completely in all of our dairy products. And fortunately, it's not something by design. It's just the fact that we don't have any rain here, and the jet stream avoids us because it doesn't rain here. We're in a desert.
Okay, and you're located in Fresno, is that correct?
About 20 miles south and west of Fresno. That's correct.
Okay. Okay, I want to shift gears a little bit here.
Sure.
you grow almonds, is that correct?
We do, yes.
Okay, and I was talking to my partner the other night about raw almonds, and it's my understanding that there's not a whole lot of truly raw almonds left in this country. And because they're irradiated, and I wanted to hear your take on that and your concerns or what your thoughts are on that.
Well, back in 2008, there was a law, well, I shouldn't say a law, there was a marketing order by the USDA at the invite of the California Almond Board. And what happened was they were getting some salmonella in the almonds that were being processed here in California because of the kinds of farming practices that the farmers were using on almonds. They have fan jets, spraying a lot of herbicides, and no growth, no biodiversity on the floor of the almond, the beds of where the almonds are harvested onto on the floor of the crop. And as a result, the biodiversity, salmonella loves that environment, especially if you have a bunch of coyotes going through and crapping all over the place. And you would harvest that up and send it into the processing plant where you hull and shell your almonds. So these conventionally produced almonds were having some issues with salmonella being found and people getting sick with those almonds. So the processing industry and the big producers of almonds here in California petitioned the USDA to have a mandatory almond pasteurization standard for California almonds. And that affected all almonds produced in California, but did not affect almonds outside of California or European almonds. So what you find now is that without hardly any notice to anybody, I think it was like 20 comments on the open comment period the USDA had, that this marketing order was passed without much discussion. What happened was people who wanted their almonds raw and could buy them at farmers markets could no longer get them. However, there's a very small loophole in this and it allows up to 100 pounds per person per day to be sold from an on-farm store or farmer's market legally as truly raw. And Organic Pastures Dairy does take advantage of that loophole, and we send our almonds off to be shelled and hulled but sent back to our operations to be packaged here before they're ever irradiated or heated or some other way steam treated to be pasteurized. But what's really a misnomer about this entire law is that it's not for all almonds. So it's not about food safety. It's much more than that. It's about the California brand that they didn't want to be associated with recalls with salmonella. But you can bring in truly raw almonds from Europe and sell them in California stores, and they have not been pasteurized. So you got all kinds of strange labeling issues here in California because the word raw doesn't mean raw anymore. The raw almond actually has been pasteurized. And we just got so upset about that because can you imagine Organic Pastures Dairy going out and selling our milk as milk, but in fact it had been pasteurized, but people are thinking it's raw? I mean, that's the confusion that's going on. I'd be thrown in jail for that, you know? So there's really, in the food industry, there's very little, it's mostly politics more than anything, And the labeling is it's just egregious when it comes to understanding what's in the food. And you can add in your whole argument about GMOs at this point, because people should be entitled to know if their food is grown as a genetically modified organism, GE, genetically engineered, or whether it's not. And right now, we have no transparency through to see what we're eating. And consumers should have full knowledge and transparency of not only whose farm it came from, but what kind of food it is exactly. And at this point, almonds right now are seriously mislabeled, because a raw almond in California has been pasteurized. So you have to go to a place like Organic Pastures Dairy, or there's a couple of or McAfee Farms, to actually get a label that says truly raw organic almond has never been heated or processed in any way, or buy a European almond. And that's kind of a sad state of affairs for California and the United States to have misbranded the product so badly that consumers don't even know what they're buying or eating.
Well, do you have any suggestions? I know that you mentioned, and I think on your website it says that you no longer have them because of the growing season was a problem last year. Is that correct?
Yeah, we ran short.
Yeah.
The raw almonds are so popular, we actually sold out pretty darn quick, and then we were short last year. We had to make some contractual commitments with processors that buys our almonds and shelves them into Europe, and we were short. We only had 10,000 almonds instead of our normal 30,000 pounds of almonds. This next year, we should have a lot more.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's a market opportunity for those that want to sell at farmers markets and actually take care of their consumers.
Okay. And so is that what you suggest people do, or what would you say to our listeners if they want to know about whether they're getting truly raw almonds or not?
Well, you have to call a farmer. You have to call the place you're buying and say, are these a truly raw almond? Have they been heated? Have they been irradiated? Have they been gassed? What have you done to them? Have they just shelled? Is that it? And you have to ask those hard questions. That makes it so difficult to buy food now, and the consumer has to be a food safety consultant for themselves and an expert instead of just going buying an almond that's got a truthful statement on the outside.
I fully agree, but I think that it's up to us now, and it's unfortunate that it is this way, but we need to know the source of our food. We need to ask,
yes, you do.
We need to ask questions, we need to call the company, and that's why eating local, knowing your farmer, is becoming more important than it has ever been.
Absolutely, completely, I agree 100%.
Yeah. So I have kind of a off the subject, but sort of on the subject question for you. There was a lot of controversy around that Super Bowl ad about God Made a Farmer.
Yep.
And it's my understanding it was filmed on your property. Is that true? And what was your take on it?
The answer to that is yes and no.
Okay, part of it was on your property.
No, no, no. They came out and they shot for an entire afternoon. They bought a brand new Dodge truck out of my farm because it was a Dodge truck supported ad. And they had me climbing out of a tractor and had me doing this, holding calves and doing kind of stuff. They took about 5 or 6 hours of my time to get a great footage, fantastic shots. And none of it was ever used. We were all holding with a great anticipation that we were going to be a part of footage that was shot at Organic Pastures Dairy or McAfee Farms was used in the ad. And they used some Midwest farmer kind of wheat-based, older generation type stuff. We were too avant-garde, too green, too natural, too young. And we aren't sure exactly why they didn't choose the pictures they took here, but it was kind of a national competition between a bunch of photography organizations to get their shots into that collage, and we didn't make it. So it was something we were involved with. We were never paid or anything like that. It was just they came out to our farm and did a bunch of shooting, but they never used our pictures.
Okay, well, what was your take on that ad?
Well, I thought it was kind of very patriotic. I thought that there was a lot of criticism after it that it was kind of racial, that it didn't really show all the races and it didn't show poor farmers. I don't know. I took a different take on it. I thought it was good to recognize farmers. I think it was good to recognize the food that we eat as something very important. But I also saw it as the picture was like, oh, the poor farmers cry for the farmer. How sad. Look at how wrinkled and how beat up they are versus a farmer kicking ass and doing great, you know?
Right.
And that's where I was disappointed, because we were kicking butt and doing good. and showing all the value of consumer connection and kind of this new wave of new generation of farming, when what it was the ad was about how sad and how pitiful and how beat up a farmer was and how grateful we should be for these farmers that have thrown themselves in the railroad tracks of life so we can all eat. And I kind of took a different take on that. I thought that farming should be upbeat and showing the nuances of pioneering and the strength of the new generation and youth and hopefulness. But I think that maybe that ad was true, that a lot of the farmers are beat up, and it is an older generation trying to survive, and the new generation hasn't taken over because it's lost a lot of hope. So perhaps it was a true ad. It wasn't the ad I wanted to make. It was the ad I wanted to make was there's hope in the future, and that whole unprocessed natural foods and raw milk are powerful foods, and it comes from a new way of looking at food as a pharmaceutical, but it's a FARM, pharma, not PHAR. You know, the way
right.
we're going to produce food in the future is going to prevent disease versus go to the doctor repeatedly and get sicker and sicker from these horrible pharmaceutical drugs that are killing us. So, you know, it was a different take. And other than that, I mean, I think some people kind of ran off a little bit with that it had certain nuances that weren't good and stuff. I know it was well done. It was very powerful. But, you know, the message wasn't the hopeful future that I thought would be good.
Right. And I personally was holding my breath watching it because when it first came on, I thought it was going to be a Monsanto ad.
Yeah.
And I was going, no.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly how Monsanto does present themselves
uh-huh.
as this wonderful new generation of products that no longer need to be sprayed with pesticides. And they're so sustainable and so wonderful and so green because they've genetically modified our food to become its own pesticide.
Right.
That kills us off internally, not by spraying on the outside, but killing us on the inside.
Right, and that's a whole nother show.
A whole nother show.
Well, you know, Mark, given all this information, we like to leave people with something that they can do, kind of like a solution. You know, here's what we have, but what can we do to change? In this instance, what can we do to assist in making our individual states recognize that we want raw milk?
Well, here's what I say to everyone all the time. This is a teaching and educational problem. And this is about a personal responsibility problem. The fact that people need to know that health is a personal responsibility challenge for the most part. Now, there are exceptions to that, but the bottom line is, if you're challenged in this life with health, it's because of you not taking personal responsibility for your food and your exercise and the love you put in your heart. So there's going to be an evolution here where people take on personal responsibility, start exercising, and start acknowledging that food is going to be the source of your longevity, and whether you have autoimmune diseases, and whether you get diabetes or obesity or whatever. So food is health. Food is the basis of your immune system. Just like Hippocrates said 2,400 years ago, let food be your medicine and medicine be your food. That is exactly where we've got to get back to be able to prevent disease in America. Now, my hat is off. My accolades are my deepest appreciation to doctors for treatment and trauma. They're heroes. But when it comes to preventative disease or the autoimmune chronic diseases, they're the last place you want to go. It's a farmer's market, and it's a personal responsibility. So it's education. You've got to get smarter and get off this roller coaster, and you got to get off antibiotics and use it only as an emergency kind of procedure for saving your life. And it's always been whole unprocessed natural foods that have been the prevention nutrition of life. So get educated, go to the farmer's market, take personal responsibility, know your local farmer, buy raw, safe raw milk and all of its wonderful food products, the cheeses, the butters, the creams, and you will start restoring your gut back into its original powerhouse of health, and you will have a completely different outlook for life. People that drink raw milk and eat whole natural foods are not the people that get sick by and large. And so we have to take personal responsibility and stop relying on the pharmaceutical interests and the drug companies and the doctors that are completely overburdened anyway in the ERs. It's crazy what's going on there. And take on personal responsibility and nutrition as the preventative step we take ourselves. And in doing so, we will support farmers, we will dollar vote, and dollar voting is critical because it tells industry, we don't want any more of that crap. We want this instead. Dollar voting is a completely recognizable vote that says, don't do this, do that. So support your local farmers. It's good for cows. It's good for the pastures. It's good for carbon sequestration because cows on pastures sequesters carbon. It's good for the environment. It's good for your gut. It's good for your kids. It's good for fertility. It's good for your family. It's good for America. It's good. So that's my message to people.
Wow, that's wonderful. And I concur with you wholeheartedly.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Mark. And Mark's website is organicpastures.com, so you can find out more about his farm and his raw milk and other products. And thank you for listening, everyone. We appreciate you being part of Food Integrity Now. And as always, we like to say, stay active, stay informed, and be well. We'll be back next week with another great show.
Thank you.